From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour has been made, so far, exactly zero times. On this primary day for New York State voters, we're looking at political math. Are the voters going to get the candidates they truly want? The likely Republican nominee is Donald Trump, and so far, he has won a pile of states. But Trump has not cracked 50% in a single state primary yet. That means that even as the field has narrowed from 17 candidates to 3, he is winning with pluralities. A majority of Republican voters are not voting for him. He's hoping to change that today in New York State, but if he does, it'll be for the first time. A professor of mathematics named Donald Sari has a warning for us. He's the author of the book Chaotic Elections, A Mathematician Looks at Voting. And he says to American voters, quote, "You should be worried because almost all of the current voting systems can lead to horrible outcomes on a surprisingly large frequency. They're not fair, but there is a possible solution." So this hour, we look at the math of elections. Are elections fair? Are we getting the elected leaders that we should be getting based on the will of the electorate? Are plurality winners a good thing? What is the best voting system to reflect the will of the voters? Let me welcome my guest for the hour, Donald Sari, Distinguished Professor of Mathematics and Economics at the University of California, Irvine, and the author of the book Chaotic Elections. Great to have you in studio. How are you, sir?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, this is a primary election day in New York State, and we're not used to having our votes really matter. We've seen a lot of the candidates. But as I said, if Donald Trump wins, for example, that'll be if he cracks 50%, it'll be the first time. Are plurality winners? I mean, I think I know what you're going to say here, but what should we make of a string of plurality winners?
Watch it with care. Let me give you first a little insight, a little intuition about the plurality vote. Suppose in the local school district tomorrow morning, the superintendent says, from now on, we're going to rank students strictly according to the number of A's they receive. That's it. Well, if you think about it, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Because A represents excellence. But then think of that student who got B's in all his courses and another student that got an A in gym and F in everything. Well, the ranking is that student with an A in that one course is going to be ranked above the student with all B's. That's the problem with the plurality vote. The plurality vote, you're only able to represent your A candidate. Your B candidate, C candidate are treated like your F candidate. There's no difference at all among them. And as a result, what happens is that the candidates, which are well-liked, but not necessarily right at the top, get dropped and dropped early.
And that's what I think in many ways, that's what some of the analysis on the Republican side has found. 17 candidates, I guess if you count George Pataki and Jim Gilmore, there were 17 candidates, down to 3 now. But there are a lot of analysts who think, well, some of those B and C candidates are the Marco Rubios, the candidates who might have a better chance in the general election, and they were out before even the final 3 now.
If you ever run into a situation where the pundits are saying, well, we need to have enough people drop out of contention, you know immediately that the voting system is not picking up the B, C, D candidates. And you know right away that the people that probably are the favorites are probably not making. Let me give you an example from 1996. In 1996, remember that Robert Dole, was hoping to clinch the nomination for the Republican Party and clinch it early so that he could focus his energy against Clinton. Now, in the state of New Hampshire, almost all of the polls show that Robert Dole was first or second ranked among the Republican voters. There was another candidate, a candidate that had 27% first-rate place ratings, and then bottom-ranked by a large number of other voters, Pat Buchanan. And if you recall, Pat Buchanan beat Robert Dole. And if you recall, Pat Buchanan continued to win until enough other candidates dropped out. This other candidates dropping out means that the voting system, the plurality vote, is not reflecting the true views of the voters. Robert Dole clearly was a favorite, but the plurality vote didn't show it.
So it sounds like what you're saying is, even if you have 17 candidates, you don't have to have a candidate win a majority of the votes to reflect the will of the voters. The will of the voters, if you have 17 candidates, it's very unlikely that anybody would win a majority. It's almost certain that whoever would be the winner, a first choice winner, would be a plurality winner. But what you're saying is the real will of the voters has to be factored into much more than just the first choice.
That's absolutely correct. What you need to do is bring in the second to third ranked, all of the other type ranks. Otherwise, you end up with distorted outcomes. Just take a look at when you're making your choices where to go for dinner tonight. What you're doing is you have your first choice, your second choice. It might be close between them. But that you don't want to end up at a fast food place when you were planning to go for a nice dinner just because everyone voted only for the first choice.
You know, it's interesting. I think of, I don't know if my wife is listening. I remember when we had to choose a boy's name, and it was like, what's your first choice? What's mine? But if my first choice was her last choice, and her first choice was my last choice, we did not wrestle it out on that. We chose a B choice, which turns out, of course, to be a perfect name for my son. So we're thrilled with that, of course. But I think if given my first choice or just given her first choice, it might have been something different. It would have just been unreflective of both of us. Yeah. It's an example. I guess it's the same kind of thing that Don is saying. If you go out to dinner and a family votes and there's five people in the family and it's the same kind of thing. It's probably going to be a B or C choice, but more reflective of kind of a compromise as opposed to one person wants one thing, but nobody else does.
Oh, I think it could end up being a F choice if you are voting with the plurality vote on here.
I see, yes.
Let me give you a couple of examples that, from my own experience. What happens is I was on the council for the dynamical systems in astronomy, Division of Dynamical Astronomy, and they were awarding a prize. They came back to the council, the prize committee, and said, we are not going to recommend anyone this year. Why? Well, we keep coming up with these two names, and we know that so-and-so really should be the winner. And yet, every time we vote, it comes up with candidate A or candidate B, but not candidate C, who we all believe really should be the winner. And they had many votes. So they happened to have the ballots, and I said, oh, it's very, very clear what's happening here. People can't vote for their second-ranked candidate, their third-ranked candidate, etc. And as a result, what they're doing is getting the two extremes, something that I believe is happening in the Republican Party today.
So I don't want to, you know, get too down into the candidate-by-candidate political muck, but we do have some candidates in this field who are polarizing, I think. And to that extent, I wonder if you've looked at any of the data, and does it indicate to you that if we went with a different system, that if we went to more of a ranking system, it even has a name, we'll get to that coming up here, that Don likes a lot better than what we currently have. Would Donald Trump likely be the nominee? Would he be leading right now?
Of course, I don't know. Nobody knows. Sure. You have to get all the data, go through it. But my suspicions right from the very beginning was that that if we had the plurality vote, I mean, because of the plurality vote, Donald Trump and Cruz were starting to move ahead and dropping out B candidates, which probably most of the party would have accepted. And once they were just about the only candidates, there was a bandwagon effect. And so if we did not have the plurality vote, but we had something else, something that could reflect your second rank, your third rank candidates, I think that we wouldn't be in this situation today.
And
this is not a commentary on
Don is not reflecting his own voting preferences.
No, not at
He's
all.
Simply analyzing where the electorate is based on the available data and the system that we have today. And that's it. And by the way, listeners, this is a perfect chance for you. If you want to weigh in on systems, if you've got questions about, well, I don't know how much Don wants to talk about delegate math and some of the intricacies, I don't even know if, you know, quantum mechanics can totally figure out all of the delegate math and superdelegates, et cetera. But we are going to talk about a little bit about the electoral college, power of groups, things like that with Donald Tsari this hour. If you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Would like to hear from you. As the polls have been open for just over an hour today on primary day, are you satisfied with the voting system? And the more you hear from Don Tsari, maybe you will be less satisfied with that. And if you've seen some of his work, he lays out, I think, in more detail some of the problems he has with the current system. And you give some examples, and I know tonight in your presentation, which we'll talk about in a moment, tonight you'll be giving an example that I've seen you give in the past, which is sort of the milk, beer, wine example. But I guess we could choose just about any beverages or choices, et cetera. What's the basic setup here? How would you frame this for the audience to understand the point?
Well, let me ask the people in the audience, if you have a piece of paper there and a pencil, let me give you the example, and then you'll see what can go wrong. Suppose I'm having a reception tonight, and suppose that we have 15 people on a committee to choose the beverage of choice. Now, suppose six of them, well, you know, they like health, so they want milk first, wine second, beer last. Then you have five of them, they're from Wisconsin. What else? They don't have a choice. They like beer first, wine second, milk last. And the last four, they're from the wine territory here in New York State, and so they want wine first, beer second, and milk last. Conflict. How are you going to settle it? Well, you vote. So if we vote, just look at what I told you, and you have on that paper, six votes are going to go to milk. Five votes are going to go to beer. Four are going to go to wine. And so, therefore, milk is the clear winner. You get into the car, you drive down to the local beverage store to buy a keg of milk. When you get there, they say, whew, good thing you didn't want beer, because we had all the people from WXXI here, and they just bought out all the beer there was. Okay. So, therefore, there's only milk and wine. First place milk and last place wine. Well, of course, you're going to go with the first place milk. But check. If you check, you will discover that six people like milk and nine, 60% of them, prefer wine, last place wine, to first place milk. 60% of the voters, nobody changing their minds, really prefer last place wine to first place milk. Then let's go on to compare milk and beer. Same thing. Six voters will prefer milk. Nine will prefer beer. And so by landslide proportions, these voters, what they do, nobody changing their minds, what they do is they prefer anything to milk. That includes me too, by the way. Now, if you go on to the last group of wine and beer, you'll find that two-thirds of these voters, two-thirds of them, prefer wine to beer. So what do we have? We have the plurality vote. And the plurality vote, what does it do? It's that the winner, that landslide proportions of people prefer anything to the winner, and the loser is preferred to any of the other alternatives. And the fact is, you can find actual examples where this occurs in actual elections. Not difficult at all if you know what to look for.
I want to take a couple of your phone calls, and then I'm going to ask him, what's the name of the system that's much better, and why don't we see it here? So we're going to work through that with Don Sari. I'll start with Leslie in Rochester first up on the phones. Go ahead, Leslie.
Hi, I just voted in the Democratic primary, and I saw that there were the two main candidates, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and then each had a row of delegates next to their name. And our instructions were to pick six delegates, even if they were in the same column. And so it was very unclear, as you voted, who these delegates were actually aligned with at this point. And I wondered if that information was available so that people who haven't voted yet can look that up.
Leslie, thanks for the phone call. I don't know the answer to that offhand, and I will say, maybe tangential to Don's concern about the actual system, is the fact that we often, even the pretty civically minded people like Leslie, show up on election day and can't fully discern what's even on the ballot, looking at rows of delegates. So, Leslie, I don't know offhand, but what I would do is I'd probably call the Board of Elections on that. I'm seeing a lot of complaints about the same kind of things online here on Twitter. So I would call the Board of Elections, and or hopefully someone at your polling place can answer those kind of questions. I don't know offhand, and I haven't seen a ballot myself yet today. I've been at work and the polls open at noon here. But I've also seen listeners asking questions, Don, about, let me just give you an example. Where was it? Maggie says, we don't have the same election in every state. Some states have caucuses. Does he think caucuses are more fair?
No. Well, that was a quick answer, huh?
No.
And let me go back to Leslie's question,
sure.
Which
yeah,
I thought
absolutely.
Was a very good one.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Leslie, what happens is the following. You are not voting for one of the two Democrats. You're voting for their delegates.
Okay.
And what
I should have just asked Don this, Leslie, but go ahead, yes.
And each state has different rules. I'm not from the state of New York. I'm from California. And so I'm not completely sure of what are the rules. But what you're doing is you're voting for delegates who are then going to the national convention, and then they will vote. And so the delegates that you're voting for are, at least on the first round, are obliged to vote for whomever, whatever role they happen to be in.
Right.
But not after that. What about caucuses? I mean, we've heard Mr. Trump raise a lot of issue about caucuses, which a little bit surprised me, because he's one of his strong suits, he claims, is that he's a business person and he knows how to get around all of these deals. And now he claims that he doesn't know the rules, which really surprised me. But some of the comments he's raising about the fact about the caucuses are correct. What they are is they're determined by people getting together, persuading each other, and trying to get the delegates. And a lot of times, in Colorado, for example, the delegates they select at the caucuses are then just raised to the next level for to choose other delegates who are actually going to then go to the convention. So it's a very confusing thing. I would much prefer, as Leslie, I think you would too, that your vote for whoever you voted for would be registered for that person.
When it comes to caucuses, my understanding is in Iowa, there is a so-called viability threshold of 15%. I don't know if that's true in both parties. I know on the Democratic side it is. And you've got to reach that 15. So in other words, whatever your caucus site is in Iowa, if you are supporting a candidate that comes in below 15%, that's considered non-viable, and you've got to go support somebody else, and they'll try to woo you. Is that a fair and effective way?
Well, actually, it's probably better than some of the other systems. The reason being is that if you voted and you were under that 15-point threshold, then your votes wouldn't count at all. But if you're under that 15 and then you say, okay, you don't have enough votes for Senator X,
yep,
then what you can do is you can go to another group. And they actually do. They move around in the rooms to stand in different groups. And so your vote will count. And there, your second-place vote or your third-place vote may have an influence.
All right. So for all the railing we've done on caucuses, Don Sari is telling us one of the reasons that caucuses may have a little more fairness, though it's still not the ideal system that he's going to tell us about. I know a lot of listeners are saying, what is that? Well, we've got to work through some of the other bugs first. James in Fairport is next up with a question on the Electoral College. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, I was curious to what degree you would say the benefits of changing the system of being able to have multi-place votes, to what degree that would impact it more or less than, say, changing the Electoral College to give more direct voting. And the other thing I'm curious about is, as far as those second and third choices, do you think that would impact the enthusiasm of various candidates?
James, thanks for the questions. And Don, you want to start with the Electoral College part first? Go ahead.
I'll start with the Electoral College. This is, in my opinion, an example of game theory. Of game theory started way back when they all got together in Philadelphia and tried to figure out what to do. The big states and the small states. How are we going to find some sort of compromise? Well, what we did is we ended up with the House of Representatives to address the small state issue, and then the Senate. They handled each state and the big state type issues, et cetera. Or actually a little bit the other way around. The Electoral College then, what you're doing is, again, when you're voting in New York and voting and I'm voting in California, I am not voting for the candidate. I am voting for representatives to go to the Electoral College. And the Electoral College will then vote. Will we ever be able to change it? My opinion is probably not. The reason is, look at all the people that were up there at New Hampshire. Look at how much money was spent in New Hampshire on the election. And how much, how many of these representatives do you think would be there if the votes from New Hampshire really didn't matter much? You know, in the election time, I was at Northwestern University in Chicago for many years. And Wisconsin, a little bit to the north of us, because of the number of votes which they have in the Electoral College, in Wisconsin, we had representatives up there in late October and early November, and Green Bay, Wisconsin. You think it's cold here sometimes. Green Bay, Wisconsin, standing out there talking to voters. If we didn't have the Electoral College, they wouldn't be there. So states of the size of, Vermont, New Hampshire,
Wyoming.
Colorado, Wyoming, even the size of Colorado, Wyoming, all of them, it would be definitely against their interests to get rid of the Electoral College. So whether we should or should not get rid of the Electoral College, it doesn't matter. Under our Constitution, it's not going to happen.
Well, the good news is we've never had a situation where a president was elected with the will of the Electoral College, but not the popular vote. But if it ever... Don's looking at me saying...
Repeat that again?
I'm being sarcastic.
Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, if that ever did happen, you might think that would be the straw that broke the camel's back. Of course, it has happened as recently as 2000. And if that doesn't change it, it probably won't change. But is that to you, if the popular vote winner is different than the Electoral College vote winner, is that to you of ipso facto evidence that the system doesn't work?
I don't know. I'm still a little bit out on that. I think that if we were doing it strictly on the total popular vote, I think areas like Rochester, upstate New York, would be ignored.
Big population centers would be where
it
was at.
Big population centers would be, the concentration would be strictly on there, because you would want to get as many votes as you can, and there aren't as many votes here in Rochester as there would be, say, in Gary, Indiana. And so I think that that would, I'm afraid of what that would do.
Is it hyperbole to say that the plurality vote system is the worst possible system?
Pretty close to the worst possible system. There's others that are even worse, but the ones that are standardly used, yeah.
Well, there is something called the Borda count, B-O-R-D-A. B-O-R-D-A, and you've essentially been kind of describing it.
Yes.
But is this the answer? If you were creating a system from scratch, would you be using the Borda count?
Probably. A Borda count or a system very close to the Borda count. In fact, I've been working with a couple of the with the Grammys and some of the others in terms of their voting system. And that's what I recommended as a version of it. Let me just give you the Borda count. Suppose you have three candidates. What you do is you give, and you mark your ballot. We'll give 2 points to your first place candidate, 1 to your second, and 0 to your third. And what happens then is you're able to reflect your lower ranked candidates. I gave a story when I was on the council for the Division of Dynamical Astronomy. And they said, we believe that so-and-so should win, but just didn't get it with the plurality vote. And the fact is that if they had used a board account, the candidate they believed would be the best would have won. So the board account, and let me see how show you how the board account ties in with pairwise voting, which is what we all accept to a certain extent. Suppose you happen to like Ann best, Barb second, Connie third. If you had an Ann-Barb election, you would vote for Ann. If you had an Ann-Connie election, you would vote for Ann. If you had a Barb-Connie election, you would vote for Barb. And what you would then get is you would be giving 2 points to Ann, 1 point to Barb, and 0 to Connie, which is the board account. And so really the board account, one of the advantages of it, it's that it is the natural, the unique natural extension of pairwise voting. If you go back to that beverage example, if you wrote down the rankings of the people, you will discover that wine is the board account winner of that election.
So the board account was created where?
It was back in 1770. Boy, a long time ago. That was even before me. So what happens is Jean-Charles de Borda was a well-known mathematician and worked in astronomy and all sorts of different areas. A tremendous person, a great intellect. He was worrying that the way in which they were electing people into the French Academy of Sciences was flawed. And he pointed out that by using the method of the French Academy of Sciences, they could get mediocre people elected, and that superior people would not get elected. What was their horrible method they were using? Now, you know, plurality vote. The plurality vote. And so what he did is he developed the board account. So if you have, I gave an analogy earlier about the plurality vote in A's, just giving A's. Well, suppose you have five candidates, A, B, C, D, F. Sound familiar?
Yes.
And if I gave 4 points, this means they're the board account, I give 4 points to an A, 3 to a B, 2, 1, 0. It's our 4-point grading system. That's all it is. And it would, and it can be shown up one side and down the other, that it can be given, that it has far more positive attributes than any other voting system that we have on there.
Why don't we have that system in this country?
Well, two things. Number one is it was adopted by the French Academy. I'll go back to that story. Until a new member came in and decided that he wasn't able to manipulate who was going to get elected with the board of count. And that new member, Napoleon Bonaparte, then changed them back to the plurality vote.
Wow.
As far as in the United States or other places, it has been used in certain places. I was told it was used in Cambridge for a while and a couple of other places, local type elections. I'm not sure on that fact right now. I have it on my notes somewhere, but I don't have it with me now. But it's a new system, and what happens is you have to be able to explain it, and it takes a long time for the ideas to get through.
You did it pretty quickly, Professor. I mean,
thank you.
I think we've got, and from what I have read, there are modified versions of it.
Yes.
You can weight the points differently in terms of whether it's, you know, three candidates, 3-2-1, 2-1-0, however you want to do it. There's different ways to do it, but so there's modified versions of the board account. But I think it's pretty easy to understand. I think baseball fans understand, as far as I understand, the MVP is chosen with a kind of
absolutely.
A board account. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And also the rankings. Every Sunday and Monday, I go to the sports page to see the rankings of basketball teams and football teams and collegiate. And indeed, that's done by the board account.
Oh, AP Top 25, et cetera, that's a board account.
Yeah.
Okay, so we already have experience with it, whether we know it or not.
That's correct.
We're using it in many ways.
That is correct.
But we're not using it in politics.
We're using it for the example, the Grammy Awards. Mm-hmm. The Grammy Awards on the first level, the screening level. They use a version of the board account. Now, how many songs are there? Well, there's just far, far too many. And so what they do is they just choose it for the top five, and they use that for the selection for the final.
Let me grab Bill in Penfield, and I want to keep working through this board account thing because I'm just amazed that, well, anyway, let me get Bill first. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, Evan, a couple of points. One, it does sound complicated in theory. But the Republic of Ireland uses something like it. That is proportional representation, single transferable vote, and multiple counts to fill the seats in Parliament. And when you see them actually counting the votes as opposed to hearing the explanation, it actually works pretty smoothly. But I think one of the keys is they also have multi-member constituencies. So you have a bigger electoral district, and more members of Parliament or Congress, and so there might be three or four or five members, and then they count up people's first choices, second, third, and fourth. If it's say a four-seater, you need 25% of the vote plus one to fill a seat, and then they after the first count, they'll knock off the people on the bottom and redistribute their second choices and gradually get up to filling all four seats. It tends to be more representative. That's true.
Bill, I'm impressed with your background on here. Very good. These are apportionment methods. A similar method was used in the city of Cincinnati. Was brought in by one of the Taft brothers, and it was used for the city council for many years. Then ran into an unfortunate situation in the 50s where they then abandoned it, and they did get results that they liked. The board account itself has been used in Australia, and has two very strong results. And that, just as you stated, it is a type of a runoff election. The general method in Europe of appointing people, and in Brazil and various other countries, of appointing people to legislatures according to the list method that you described quite nicely, is actually a form of what we call apportionment methods. Now, let me give you a quick example of apportionment methods. In a couple of years, we're going to be having a census. And with that census, we're going to then apportion the number of congressional seats per state based on the census. And boy, does it have anomalies. And those anomalies, those quirks, crop up in France, in a lot of these other countries, on a regular basis. This is where you might be entitled to, I don't know, 15.3 representatives. And so therefore, you can't take a representative and cut them in 0.3. So therefore, you have to round either up or down. And the rounding up and down can be where you round up, not, what did I say, 15.3. Mm-hmm. You might end up with 17, you round up too high, or you might end up with 12, you round down too low. And these are on a fairly regular basis. When I asked one of my French friends about it, he says, that's life, that's life. But I don't think it's fair.
Well, I think there's one other point to this, the Electoral College issue you brought up. We know that all of Massachusetts' electoral votes will go to the Democrat. All of Mississippi's will go to the Republican. But probably 40% of the voters in Mississippi are Democrats, and 40% of the voters in Massachusetts are Republican, and their votes aren't registered at all.
That's correct. And what happens in Nebraska and in, I think it's Maine, the other state, is what they do is the number of electoral votes go according to the population, according to who won which congressional district. This was very common. And back in the 40s and 50s, where the electoral votes would go, would be proportionally represented or distributed. And I think that that would handle a lot of the problems that we see with the Electoral College today.
Bill, thanks for the phone call. I wonder what you think of the Republican version of the presidential primary. The Democrats and Republicans award delegates from New York State in different ways. In New York State, there are 95. There are 27 congressional districts, each with three delegates. And the way it's set up for today is on the Republican side, the winner will get two, the runner-up will get one. And the third place finisher will get zero, unless the winner cracks 50%, in which they will get all three. Do you like that system?
It has its virtues. It also has its failings. Yeah, I think it's more proportional, and so that is a positive type statement about it, yes.
So, listeners, if you're watching on the Republican side tonight, well, this is where New York State really will matter. Donald Trump's going to win the state. The real question is district by district. They're all mini battlegrounds, and will he get to 50% in each district? If he does, he's going to win the bulk of the 95 delegates, and if you're doing the math, 27 times 3 is 81. 14 more delegates statewide, and it's the same kind of thing. It will be awarded more proportionally unless the winner gets to 50% statewide, in which they'll get all 14. So in a good scenario for Donald Trump today, he could get 90 or almost all of the 95 delegates, and if he doesn't have as good a day as he wants, he could end up with around 70 of the 95. Why it matters is he needs a big night to get back on track to try to get to that 1237 number before the convention so he can clinch the nomination. So this is where New York voters really, really do matter today. Let's get a short break in. I want to remind you of our guest for the hour because I've got a lot more of your questions and mine that we're going to be working through over the next 20 minutes or so with our guest, Donald Sari. He is a distinguished professor of mathematics and economics at the University of California, Irvine, the author of the book Chaotic Elections, A Mathematician Looks at Voting. He's a guest of the University of Rochester Mathematics Department. Tonight, 5 o'clock, for a lecture in Gergen 101 at Gergen Hall. It's an election year, but will voters elect whom they want? That's tonight at 5 o'clock at the University of Rochester. More of your questions are next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, Ken Rudin, political junkie, joins me in the first hour, breaking down the New York primary results and looking ahead for the front runners. What happens next, and what are the chances they might not be their party's nominees? Then in our second hour, Keegan Kuhn, director of Cowspiracy, talks about why he's a vegan and is concerned about the real threat to the environment. Talk with you Wednesday.
Oklahoma City, 1995, 9:02 a.m. A federal building destroyed. In charge of investigating, Merrick Garland.
We made it up as we were going along, and it was clear when that was over that we couldn't do that again. We had to have a system.
A Supreme Court nominee's Oklahoma City role and the latest on the New York primary later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Nan writes to the program and says, any comments from your guest on how to end gerrymandering? Do we need to end gerrymandering?
Absolutely. Absolutely, we need to. Let me give you an example. What is gerrymandering? What I do when I'm working with undergraduates, even, is I'll take a state, a square state, and so that may be South Dakota or North Dakota or something else, and we'll say that, okay, there's just about a 50-50 division between Republicans and Democrats. And then, and the challenge is for the students to come up with congressional districts for the four regions, the four representatives, so that either the Republicans or the Democrats will win three votes, three seats, and the other party will get only one, when in fact there should be an even division of two and two. This has been used against minorities. It's been used right across the country in all sorts of ways and done in very, very clever manner. How do you handle it? Well, this has been a question of several Supreme Court decisions. It's been a question of and it's a question of mathematics. The question of mathematics is, how do I create a district which is compact, so we don't have these gerrymandering type things where the district running down a highway one block on each side, so we can get voters that we want on one type or another, and that meet the needs and have a reasonably balanced on the the blacks, the Hispanics, the whites across the line. And that mathematical issue, quite frankly, has not been answered. I have a group, we're going to be talking about it in exactly 2 weeks, where we're going to try to figure out, are there ways to try to carry forth the analysis? But right now, the mathematics is just so difficult. I mean, think of the following way. You got mountains between two villages, or you got a river or a part of the ocean going between two cities or something else like that. How do you make a compact region and take in geography? How do we take a large number of the other issues as we have changing in the population distributions, et cetera? Very, very difficult.
Yeah, there was a time before the recent redrawn districts. I remember when Congresswoman Louise Slaughter was representing, a portion of Rochester, and her her district stretched all the way to Buffalo. It looked like a diseased banana, at the time, I remember doing a story. This must have been 10, 12 years ago. There were 212,000 Democrats and 90,000 Republicans in her district. But just to the south of her, there was a district that it was essentially the flip. So it was nicely set up that way to protect the status quo, but maybe not to enfranchise the voters to feel like they had a real opportunity to have a say.
It also goes the other way around. If I could figure out how to get a district, I'm a Nordic, so let's pick on those Lutheran-type people. If I wanted, suppose there's 50% Lutherans and 50% something else. If I want to get rid of the Lutheran vote, what would you do is I would just pack them all in one district. And then in the other district, so I might have 99% all Lutherans. And then the other 1% of Lutherans was spread around. And so the others are safe districts for the non-Lutherans.
Well, and that brings me back to our conversation last hour. We talked to Noam Chomsky last hour, who's also a guest of the University of Rochester this week. They're bringing in the heavy hitters here, Don.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And we were talking about a number of issues, and one of our listeners was asking about partition. And it reminded me of someone's comment about the Kurds, of which the Kurds are strong minority populations in four different places, but they're a majority in none. And they said, how would you feel if you were a Kurd? That's why they want Kurdistan, because they are essentially oppressed minorities in four different places. And, is it that different than the way you think about certain voting populations in this country that are pushed aside so that they are strong minorities that don't have a real chance?
And that's part of the gerrymandering, precisely. The Kurds are geographically separated, things like this, but what happens is to separate them politically, and that's the gerrymandering.
All right. So if you missed the earlier part of the hour here, Don is a mathematician who has had an interest in voting and systems for a long time now, and he made the point earlier that our plurality system is just about the worst you can do. You used some pretty strong language. You said that it can lead to electing mediocre people, that and that it can take years to overturn horrible outcomes that a strong majority of an electorate would not want if you had a different system. Am I characterizing?
Oh, you're right on. You're right on. I didn't. It doesn't necessarily elect mediocre people, but because of its feature. Of its feature, as I gave it the analogy of the grading, where what happens is we only look at the voters' top rank and not their second and third and fourth rank candidates, and we can't pull in all of this information. It most surely can lead to mediocre. I'm not going to give examples on the radio right now, but I think that listeners, you can go out there, take a look at some of the elections, take a look at some that you worried about, and take a look at the polling of such and such a candidate as we were working their way up through the primaries and things like this, and you'll find examples.
More often than not, do you think the plurality system does not reflect the will of the voters?
More often than not.
That should be tremendously discouraging. And so here's Matthew writing in, and Matthew wanted to know, you mentioned the system, he didn't have the Borda system, the Borda count. He wants to know, are any world leaders today elected with that system?
No.
None?
None.
Wow. But it is used, again, in certain places, not necessarily to elect world leaders.
That's correct.
What does that simply say? And let me go back to...
Now, there's other features that have to be looked at. Now, you know, you asked earlier, you asked why is there not the strong support for the Borda count, et cetera. The mathematical analysis behind it, trying to show why, you know, where is it strong and where is it weak, turned out to be challenging. This was an issue that was raised in 1770, and it was not until, I would say, about 8-9 years ago when I was finally able to solve these problems. And it's through the use of mathematics. Now, my lecture tonight, you won't see any of this high-powered mathematics. I'll guarantee you that. All you have to do is you have to be able to count.
But, you're very kind.
But what happens is we now know that it is the best, and it takes a while for these results. The fact that we now understand why it is the best and what are features that we have to watch out for, we can handle it now.
So we have a chance to change systems.
I would hope so.
If we had the will. You mentioned Napoleon. You mentioned systems that can be manipulated. Is the Borda count the hardest system to manipulate?
Mark Satterthwaite and Alan Gibbard, back in 1973 and 75, I believe it is, what they did is they proved the result that once you have three or more candidates, all systems can be manipulated. You can't find a system that's not manipulatable. So the next issue is, which system is least likely to be successfully manipulated? And so that's an issue I raised, I'd say about a decade ago. And indeed, through use of mathematics, showed that the easiest to manipulate is the plurality vote.
Which just happens to be what we have now.
That happens to be what we have. The one that's least likely is the Borda count. Now, what you can do is you can even take out some of the manipulability out of the Borda count. And we're dealing with one organization that gives out prizes. What I did is stated that have the people write down their rankings. What you do is you use the Borda count, drop the two lowest candidates, use the same ballots and the Borda count to try to find the final ranking. This way you have, because you see, to manipulate, you have to do what? You have to have an idea of whether you can scam the system. And so I'm trying to get rid of the scamming approach.
Emma writes to us and says, Evan, you mentioned that there were 17 Republicans running at the start of this presidential primary. In the system that your guest proposes, and again, that's the Borda count, B-O-R-D-A, easy to find online and definitely worth reading about. But Emma says, in the system that your guest proposes, how many of those 17 candidates would get points on a ballot system?
Excellent question. I was in charge of hiring in the math department at Northwestern University. And what we did is we had over 1,000 applicants. No, nobody is going to be able to rank 1,000 applicants. If you take a look at the Grammys, they have I don't know how many songs. No one's going to be able to rank all of them. And so what you do is, based on the situation, is you have a cutoff. The cutoff might be that you vote for 5 candidates.
Rank your top 5.
You rank your top 5. Or you can rank all of them, but we're just going to use your top 5. And then if we drop them, things are going to move up. But rank your top 5, and then we use the Borda count on them. And that gets rid of, look, come on. We've all gone into the voting booth, haven't we? And we saw that page with all the judges. And you say, who are all these people? Okay. Well, the same thing with 17 candidates. Who are all of these people? And so probably I would have about three or four is what I would do. If the Republican Party had done something like this in 1996, they wouldn't have had the difficulties with Bob Dole that they experienced. And I think that if we had something like that here, even if we did the top three, 3-2-1, I think that we would not have the difficulties that the Republican Party is bemoaning this year.
So why then hasn't anybody decided? I mean, they've read your work over the years, and voters are clearly frustrated with the system. I could just spend the rest of the hour just reading emails from listeners today who are frustrated with the system, some who are frustrated that they can't vote today because they're not registered with either major party, and some are frustrated that state to state, the rules are different. There's not uniformity. So people are clearly frustrated with the current system. They don't always like the outcomes, and you're saying they shouldn't always like the outcomes.
Correct.
Why haven't we seen more movement to entertain something like the board account?
Well, that's one of the reasons I'm giving a public lecture tonight, isn't it? I'm giving a public lecture. The mathematics behind it is deep, but you understand the lecture? No. You have to know how to count, and that's about it. I've been giving a lot of public lectures to try to educate. Not that many people are aware of these results. And that's one of the reasons why I'm very willing, coming to Rochester is great, but why I'm very willing to give lectures of this type and why other people are giving them.
So public awareness is the first step to getting that system to change. Okay, got a few minutes left, and I want to hit two more quick points here. Don has pointed out that we use the board account, not in American politics, but from sports to rankings to music to awards to all kinds of things, to the way your family decides where to go to dinner. All of these things is using some kind of a version of the board account. And if that is, I guess, the case right now, we're going to have to see major earth move to get to the point where politics is going to embrace this. The business world doesn't always use this. You've pointed out that business leaders can make serious mistakes if they go with essentially a plurality vote as opposed to a board. What's an example?
An example would be where you're trying to choose where to locate a plant. And I say that, okay, taxes, that's worth five times more than living area or something else like this. And so what you're doing is essentially the criteria you're using to try to make a major decision is really a voting. Each criteria, you're telling the number of voters you're going to have. And so if you take a look, you have some methods that are called the best of the best. And when you sit down and analyze it, it's called the board account. Excuse me, not the board account. It is called the plurality vote.
Yeah.
That's correct. And so you can look through a large number of these and you see where there are difficulties, difficulties across the board.
And so the business leaders who choose essentially a modified board account system to make decisions on where to locate a plant, you know, et cetera, are going to make better decisions overall.
Far better.
Okay. You also have written about your experience with fourth graders.
Ah, yes.
Can you share a little bit about that?
Yes. What a wonderful time. It was during Math Awareness Week, and I was invited to come to Pittsburgh to talk to different school systems, you know, to the high school students and to the junior high and everything else. But then I was told or asked to speak to fourth graders. What do you say to fourth graders? And so I called my wife in panic, and she says, go have fun. So I walked in there, and I gave them the milk, wine, beer. Now, not beverages. I gave them TV shows. And I asked them who should be there, and I figured right away they were going to look at it, do the plurality vote, and come out with that milk was going to be the best, the TV show that I assigned to milk. No, they said wine. The TV show assigned to wine. I says, oh, no. They don't really understand what's going on. And I'm going to have a miserable 45 minutes. And I said, well, what about this? And a young girl, she stood up. I can still see her. She put her hands on her hips and she says, why are you using such a silly system that doesn't let us know rank who other candidates?
The fourth graders had figured out the game.
Fourth graders figured out the game. So I asked them, how many points should we give? And they came up with a 2-1-0. One of them came up with 1-0-1, a fourth grader.
But they were creating their own board account.
They were all board accounts. And it was wonderful. So I said, well, this must be an anomaly. So I got back to Northwestern University, and I then tried it in different school systems in fourth graders. And if you would just let the fourth graders go at it, to think about it, to critically analyze it, they almost all came up with a board account. something of it. I tried it then with a seventh grade group, and they came up with the plurality vote. They were already brainwashed into the plurality vote as the only voting system. So fascinating experience.
So kids who are fourth grade.
Fourth, fifth, and sixth.
And seventh grade is where that embedding of the plurality vote system took real permanence.
Got it.
How interesting. And that just showed that even kids can see the lack of fairness in our current voting system. And that's how we elect our president.
That's correct. I was just blown away by that experience. And I can still, these kids right now are probably through college. But the experience of seeing their insight and seeing exactly what goes wrong with the type of voting systems we have. One of the kids in one of the areas, he jumped up and he said to the teacher, "We have to write a letter to Congress and tell Congress what they're doing wrong."
That's a nice thought. Don't crush that idealism yet. About a minute left here. You said that one of the reasons you're giving this presentation tonight, 5 o'clock at the University of Rochester the lecture at Gergen Hall, 101 there, if you want to check it out tonight. One of the reasons is just to raise public awareness about these kind of systems and to explain it and to distill it for the non-mathematicians like me. But is there a political opposition because the status quo is better for the major parties? Do they like it as it is?
Probably not. I mean, look, if you're elected by such and such a system, you don't want to change the system. And so there would be a very strong pushback by the politicians, yes.
And they're probably more suspicious of what you say is a feature, that it would be the hardest system to manipulate, is a bug to those who like to manipulate.
Yeah, and what you can do is you can manipulate it. I mean, you can make it even more secure by various other methods that I described or just hinted at. But yeah, we can handle a lot of those issues.
Don, you are such a sunny, nice person. How are you not a cynic at this point in your career when it comes to voting and systems?
Well, you know, one of the things which I also hope to get across, both on this show and then tonight, is that being a mathematician is a lot of fun. There's a large amount of ideas that we constantly, it's just a lot of fun.
Well, your work, and this is no, I'm not trying to overstate this. This kind of work is the kind of work that can educate people and move them toward better systems. And if you look at plurality voting versus the board account, and again, there's that term, B-O-R-D-A, if you understand BORDA, it's hard to come away from that and think, no, I think we should protect the plurality system. It's working. I want to thank Donald Sari for coming in and joining the program today and for the work that you're doing. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And University of Rochester tonight at Gergen 101 at 5 p.m. for his lecture. It's an election year, but will voters elect whom they want? Tomorrow, Ken Rudin, political junkie from NPR, joins us in the first hour. We'll find out who voters elected in this state for the presidential primary. We will talk with you Wednesday.